Good evening and welcome to RCN Sports Talk presented by The Morning Call. I'm Chris Michael, so glad you could be with us. We have a great show lined up for you. We'll be talking some NFL draft a little later on, but it's Major League Baseball talk to lead off the program. And we're going to start by bringing in a very special guest via the phone lines from the West Coast, Major League Baseball pitcher Lou Trevino. Lou, thanks so much for joining us on Sports Talk this evening.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
Lou, of course, a lot of you will remember in the eastern Pennsylvania area. He was born and raised in eastern Pennsylvania, graduated from Upper Bucks Christian School and Slippery Rock University, played for the Quakertown Blazers, and was recently called up to the Oakland Athletics. So, Lou, congratulations for that great honor. And, you know, I'm always interested when people make the majors for the first time. Sometimes there's some unique stories about how you find out. The manager will call you in and try to set you up for some bad news and then deliver it, and other managers just come out and say it and gives you a handshake and pat you on the back and send you on your way. What was it like for you when you first found out that you finally had your dream of making it to the major leagues?
Well, I guess you could say mine was a little different. I never experienced this before, getting called up, but I was actually, we were flying in from Nashville to Iowa in Des Moines, and we had a game there the next day. Mm-hmm. And I landed, got all my gear, put it in my hotel room. Remember, my roommate and I actually went to a pizza shop open at like 12 o'clock just to get something to eat before we went to sleep. And as I was waiting for a pizza, my manager, he called me and he said, hey, are you in the hotel? I'd like to meet you. He's like, I'm actually at a pizza shop. He's like, oh, well, go get your pizza and you can be happy to eat it knowing that you're going to be a big leaguer tomorrow. So it was one of those, it was crazy. You know, it was one of those things you don't expect at all, especially being a pizza shop in Des Moines, you know. Wow. But it was great. I mean, truly great. And then I woke up my parents, I woke up my sister, my grandmom. I called everyone, and I'm sure no one was able to sleep, as kind of like me. I was not able to sleep that night.
Yeah, well, that's certainly a unique one. I'm probably not the way you dreamt it up originally.
No, not at all.
But your first game, fortunately, you saw action right away in your first game. I don't know if it went exactly the way you wanted to, but it certainly ended with an exclamation point, bases loaded. You threw, I believe it was a perfect curveball over the middle of the plate with a crowd on its feet to end the ball game with the bases loaded. What was that first day like in the bigs?
Oh, it was exciting. You know, it's something that you dreamed of as a little kid. Mm-hmm. I know I'm playing Little League, high school, even college. You know, you always think, you know, hopefully one day it's going to happen. And then for it to actually happen is great. And then you get your name called, Trevino, you know, you're in. And it's a hard feeling to explain. But, you know, you get in there, and with a really big, amazing crowd as it was, I was just, you know, nerves going through. I know my arms were heavy. Mm-hmm. My legs were heavy. You know, but I was just thankful that I was able to get the job done without getting up a run. It wasn't the most perfect inning, but you know, I was able to get it done.
Yeah. What was it like after the game? What did your teammates say? Did you get the game ball afterwards? And has things kind of settled down now and you're gotten into a little more of a regular routine now?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was great afterwards. Everyone congratulated me that, you know, that they were able to give me my first pitch ball, my first strikeout. And, you know, I was not only was I, you know, saying thanks to all the teammates because, you know, good teammates, but then afterwards on the way home, you know, your phone blowing up, you got to call parents, friends. There's a lot of people you haven't talked to in years that, you know, that say congratulations, which, you know, I'm just thankful that they will follow me. But, you know, and obviously, you know, as it goes on, it's not as new. I mean, obviously I've been to some of these stadiums, which are great, but, it's just, you just kind of realize it's even though it is the big leagues, it's another baseball game. You know, it's the same exact game, and it's just you prepare to succeed. So, and I'm thankful that so far I've been able to help the team out.
What was it like coming up, pitching in the, you know, eighth grade, ninth grade through high school with the Quakertown Blazers, pitching in the minor league system? As you come up through the system, you know, thousands of people would love to do what you're doing now. Was there any tough points, or was there any great pieces of advice you got along the way that you really look back on and think that really helped you get to the major leagues?
Well, I mean, I feel like my parents constantly, well, my dad for sure, constantly pushing me, and, you know, and it was one of those things where, you know, I struck out a bunch of people in a game, but I had five walks because I was accustomed to walking a lot of people as I was younger. You know, my dad would, hey, good job with the 10Ks, but what's up with these five walks? You know, we got to fix that here. So it's just being able to stay humble and always being thankful for the success that I had. But, you know, not relying on that and striving to be better. And it was just, again, it's just I'm thankful that I was able to work out, because there's thousands and thousands of guys and kids that dream about this, and for me to be able to have this dream a reality is just I'm blessed and thankful.
What was probably the biggest adjustment you had to make? It seems that pitchers in particular will have to make adjustments when you go up from one level, from single A to double A, double A to triple A, and then triple A to the majors. How did you handle that, a period of adjustments, and you know, what was the biggest adjustment you had to make?
Well, early on in my career, I was a starter. I mean, if you look at my stats, I did not start well. I got in 2014, I was in Wisconsin, Beloit, Wisconsin, and did not have a good year, and they moved to the bullpen. It's just, you know, I had to reevaluate what exactly I was doing. You know, I got on a better diet, a better weightlifting program. You know, in 2014, if you were to tell me, hey, Lou, are you working hard? I would have said, yes, I'm working as hard as I can. But now looking back, you know, I was not working near as hard as I could. And it was just one of those things where, you know, after the 2014 and 15 season, I really wanted to evaluate what I was doing better, or what I needed to do better, and I was able to make a few adjustments. And then obviously, as you go up in the minor league ranks, you know, from A ball to double A, triple A, the hitters get better, the competition gets better, even the strike zone gets smaller. But it was just it's just one of those things where, you know, when you get caught up and you start to have success, you start to realize that you actually belong there, and then you start to believe that you can thrive there as well. So I was just very thankful, again, that I was able to make the adjustments that was needed, especially after the 2014 and 15 season, to, you know, figure it out along the way.
Yeah. Our special guest to lead off the program, Lou Trevino, currently pitcher for the Oakland A's, born and raised in eastern Pennsylvania, also pitched for the Quakertown Blazers. Lou, have you gotten a handle on what your role is going to be? Usually when the first person, or when you get called up to the major leagues, you kind of have to be prepared for everything, long relief, mop up. They might bring you in for a hitter every now and then. Have they talked to you about what your role is going to be going forward for the immediate future?
They haven't really talked to me exactly. Just like you said, I mean, I'm expecting anything. Mm-hmm. You know, if they want me to start a game, which obviously they won't, I'll do it. You know, my goal right now is just with whatever they give me, whatever innings, whatever batter, whether it's, you know, one batter or three innings, that I'm gonna do the best I can and try and, you know, keep some zeros on the board.
Mm-hmm. Well, Lou, before we let you go, I know there's a lot of people back in eastern Pennsylvania in particular rooting for you. You know, we hope we'll get you to come home and get a little bit closer to Pennsylvania so some of your fans can see you in a ballpark. But do you have a message for some of your fans or your former coaches out there?
Well, I mean, I just want to say thank you for everyone who's helped me out. I mean, there's been a lot of people along the way that has pushed me in the right direction, especially my family, my high school coach, college coaches. I just want to say thank you for everything they've done and for believing in me.
Well, we certainly appreciate your time. Congratulations again on reaching the major leagues, and continued success to you.
All right, thank you very much.
All right, Lou Trevino, our special guest, relief pitcher for the Oakland Athletics from the eastern Pennsylvania region. Of course, we hope continued success for Lou at the big league level. Sticking with Major League Baseball as we head to our first break and our first feature of the evening, Phillies first-year player Scott Kingery has had a solid first month of his career in the big leagues, playing at five different positions. Three of them he has never played over the last couple seasons. We had a chance to catch up to Phillies manager Gabe Kapler and ask him about his super utility rookie.
See him as kind of the ability to be a field general. And no matter where he is, whether that be in center field, at third base, at second base, at shortstop, I feel like he can command that part of the diamond. So he's physically capable. We know he has the mental characteristics to handle one of the most important positions on the diamond. So glad to see him be able to bounce around and do so effectively. I think it speaks to the confidence we have in Scott. Like, I don't think there's anybody more capable of making difficult adjustments right now, despite the fact that he's young, despite the fact that he doesn't have that kind of experience. What he does have is a very slow and easy heartbeat. It's not to say that he doesn't get nervous like all of us, but I saw something similar in a guy like Corey Seager in Los Angeles, a guy like Derek Jeter in New York, where they're just the same every single day, no matter what situation you put them in. I'm not saying that Scotty is Corey. I'm not saying that Scotty is Derek Jeter. All I'm saying is that he has a really nice, even motor and a slow heartbeat that is capable of handling just about any situation.
Big events like the NFL draft. Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk, presented by The Morning Caller. Thanks to Lou Trevino for joining us for our first segment tonight. But the rest of the show, we're going to be talking largely about the NFL draft. And boy, what a night it was for fans of Saquon Barkley from our viewing area. Here to talk about that, from left to right across your screen, we have from Football Stories Magazine and from WRDV Radio, Rock Hoffman, the college football editor and on-air personality. Al Thompson, the editor-in-chief for Football Stories and sports director on the radio side, and of course, the new PR director for Saquon Barkley, senior sports writer of the Morning Call and co-host of the program, Mr. Keith Griller.
After signing
that big deal and setting a record for jersey sales in like 3 days, you've got to be making out pretty good at 10%.
Very, very good. Just like I make out here, being associated with you. So
not much of a drop off there. First of all, we're going to start right there with Saquon Barkley. A big story, of course, in our area because he came from Whitehall, big Penn State guy with a big Penn State alum in the area. And then he goes to the nearby Giants as opposed to Cleveland. There was someone out there that said, do Saquon a favor, Cleveland, and pass on him so he doesn't have to go to Cleveland to start his career. But thoughts on the NFL draft and Saquon Barkley, a local product, certainly doing good, and probably his ceiling is well beyond what he's even accomplished so far. Your thoughts on Mr. Barkley and getting selected number second in the draft?
Well, they've done their vetting, I guess. They must see that this kid has an incredible background. He's got no baggage or anything like that they're going to find out about. They want to elevate him right away, not just to be the face of the Giants, but to be the face of the NFL.
Yep.
Kind of like Adrian Peterson was. He was in every commercial everywhere. He was just every promo. ESPN has turned into a Saquon Barkley PR week. I mean, they show all their they've shown it, I think, every single game from his career just this week alone. The NFL Network, same thing, just tons of Saquon Barkley. And they're fantastic highlights. Mm-hmm. I mean, they showed the full game. They showed the game from Iowa last night, where Penn State scores on the last play of the game, and he has over 300 yards in that game, total offense. And he was just remarkable. They were showing more games today, the bowl game against Washington, where he just takes over. And so, why not get excited about it? He's a terrific young player. He's a terrific young man. He certainly has literally reinvented Penn State football to being elite, that they're going to be for the national championship every year. They're going to be considered for it. So I think it's awesome, and I think it's awesome that he's in the NFC East, and that's going to be a blast. Ezekiel Elliott is with the Cowboys. Eagles have just, they're stacked. We just hope that the Washington Redskins can follow up with that and see what they do this year.
The other thing that's going to be interesting to watch is, a lot of people felt like you don't take a running back two, mm-hmm. that you take a quarterback, and they didn't do that. And of course, the Jets, with the very next pick, take a quarterback. So it's going to be interesting how those guys are compared throughout their careers in New York, picked one right after the other. They played in that memorable Rose Bowl against each other mm-hmm. a couple years ago. So it's going to be a little jumping off point for their careers, I think.
There was a scary moment, I think, where I was at the Copley American Club when, and I know some people did have the Browns taking Mayfield, but most of the talk leading up to it was that they were going to take Darnold.
Yeah.
So when Mayfield goes one, there was this thought that, okay, maybe the Giants, we know they love Barkley, but are they going to get off of him to go for the future quarterback in Darnold? And so there was a thought there, oh my goodness, he's not going to go to the Giants. He's going to slip, maybe back to Cleveland at four, yeah. Or something like that. But a lot of people ecstatic. in this area about this. They know that it's a 80-mile drive. Sometimes, depending on how bad the Schuylkill is, it's easier to get to the Meadowlands than it is to get down to the link. And there's going to be a ton of people making that pilgrimage over there on NFL Sundays and Mondays and Thursdays when the Giants have a home game.
Keith, you were on Facebook Live broadcasting from a local establishment that night when the reaction took place. And I think you made the call before you headed out there on the show last week that you hope that everyone from Lehigh Valley jumps onto the bandwagon, becomes Giant fans, or whoever he signs with, and supports them. And I think the initial response from the Lehigh Valley has been, yeah, we're all in. We're big Saquon Barkley fans. And maybe not when they play the Eagles, but with the exception of those 2 weeks, they're going to be Giants fans.
That's exactly what I heard. It had to do a story, basically it was a reaction story, and that's what I heard. I must have heard from like five or six Eagles fans that said, oh my goodness, man, this is a tough thing. We're going to root for them 14 games of the season, but the two against our Birds, we're not going to root for them. But no, and the thing about these guys talk about him becoming the face of the NFL, he's kind of like getting more comfortable, but you could tell he's not quite there yet. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to be the man, but now he's going to have to be the man. And he's such a soft-spoken young man, a humble young man. And he's getting more comfortable with all these bright lights. He better be ready for that. But when he has his first bad game, and he's on the cover of the back cover of the Post and the Daily News, he's going to have to get ready for that kind of. Look at even Stanton found that out very quickly with the Yankees. He got booed. There's going to be a tremendously high expectation bar for this young man.
And it's ironic, too, because he might be the face of the NFL, but he's probably not the face of his own team. I mean, Eli Manning, Odell Beckham, they're probably going to get a lot of attention, too.
I think Odell than Eli, because Eli kind of has always, to me, been a guy that has stepped back from the spotlight a little bit. He'll be competing with Odell Beckham Jr. for commercials.
Well, I was shocked that way. Russell Wilson, when he was on Russell Wilson does a show, maybe just out in Seattle, but it was on national television, and he had Saquon Barkley on for this whole hour, where they kind of all went around to the gym. They went to different places to work out. He threw the ball to him, and then he had him in his house. And he did say, I'm looking forward to not only being the face of the Giants, I want to be the face of the NFL. I
mean,
Jay-Z
put that in his
ear. I agree with you. I was shocked because he had been so quiet, humble, so behind the scenes, deflecting to everybody else. And then to hear him say that, and you could almost see Russell Wilson almost encouraging him to take over that role. Mm-hmm. So, and Giants fans, the good thing about it is some of the other teams, including the Eagles, they basically shut down training camp to fans, except for those two or three stadium dates. Mm-hmm. The Giants have this massive setup they do every year around their practice fields for training camp, and they can fit, I would just guess, I don't know, but I'm guessing it's like 15,000 people they can put up there, 10,000, 15,000 people. So if you're a big Saquon Barkley fan, you can go watch training camp up there, really get a front row seat to see this. It's really, they do a tremendous production up there.
Before we move on, but what did you think of them not going for a quarterback? Eli Manning has taken a lot of shots. I mean, he's taking I just am surprised that they are investing. They're saying, we believe in Eli, and they may not get an opportunity to get a franchise quarterback. I mean, there's always free agency. We know this, and Cousins has moved around, and Case Keenum's moved around, and so forth. But what are your thoughts on them saying, look, Eli, we believe in you still?
Well, they feel like with their second-round pick, they also upgraded the line in free agency. So that helps. And, he's been a guy that has been incredibly durable his entire career. So I don't think there's any reason why they can't get two or three more years out of him, especially with when you look at the skill players that they have, Odell Beckham Jr., Shepard at the other receiver position. They spent a first-round pick on the tight end last year. So they've got plenty of people to spread the ball around with and add Saquon Barkley to. Pat Shurmur loves to throw the ball to the running backs. And, wow, could you have picked a better guy to throw the ball to out of the backfield than Saquon Barkley? So all those moves are extending Eli Manning's career. Now it's up to him to elevate his game a little bit. I mean, he's been hot and cold, and part of it is they've been bad. Their offensive line has been bad. So he's got to match that level of talent that he has around him a little bit.
I have more faith in him than I do. I think, to be honest
with you, I think that if Cleveland had taken Saquon Barkley, they were going to take Quentin Nelson second.
Really?
They were going to take the way that David Gettleman, he kind of showed his hand a little bit in his pre-draft press conference. I was up there for it. And he said he gushed over those two players more than anybody. And he says, we're up here talking about all these skill players, and he's referring to Quentin Nelson. And he says, I want to talk about the Mogwallies. I don't want to talk about the skill guys. He calls his offensive lineman Mogwallies or something like that. It was pretty funny. And then what does he do with the second round pick? He goes and gets this massive Will Hernandez to be next to Nate Solder. I always thought Brent Jones was the best. I thought he was doing a terrific job, and I thought he should have been the starter. Anyway, even if Weston Richburg was healthy, I thought that Brett Jones. And then you have John Jerry playing right guard. And then you have Eric Flowers, who was playing very well the second half of the season. So if they can kind of reinvent him to the right tackle spot, you've got a line for Saquon and to protect Eli, who at the beginning of the season last year was basically just hitting the dirt. I mean, he was seeing ghosts. And then the second half, they seemed to get a little bit better, but that was a divided locker room. It was a disaster. McAdoo, when he did not suspend Odell Beckham when he used the Eagles end zone for a fire hydrant. From what I understand, there was a lot of players who thought he should have been suspended, and he wasn't. And then he's disciplining D-backs for being late for a meeting, and that you all of a sudden you see this jailbreak, and they start suspending people, remember?
Yeah.
And they were D-backs that were walking out on meetings, leaving game and a game early, and then the whole thing was gone. And so was McAdoo.
One other pick I want to ask, and I thought that was great to add Will Hernandez, to add the offensive line, because that was the other big weakness with the Giants last year, is getting protection for Manning, as you said, but then also now creating holes for Saquon Barkley to hopefully run through. Their fourth-round pick, Kyle Uletta, was that a case of he's the best available player? Was he just, you know, a nice piece that they can have as a backup? Because clearly he's not the next franchise quarterback do you think?
He was rated, you know, some people had him rated as like a second-round pick, and just the way the quarterbacks broke with, you know, the four that went in the first round.
Yeah, just kind of got shuffled to the back.
And then they got shuffled out. So, yeah, I wouldn't go to sleep on him. He has potential there. Mm-hmm. To maybe, you know, in a couple of years, you never know. And that's, I think, another reason why with how he develops, this draft will be graded on. You know, if Will Hernandez is the guy they think he is, I mean, it looks like a plug-and-play left guard for the next 10, 12 years. If Kyle Uletta develops, I mean, it could be, you know, a really good Giants team for a long time.
Yeah. Now, as far as the Eagles, I know there wasn't as much excitement this year because you're coming off a Super Bowl. They're picking 32nd anyway going in. But I have to think Howie Roseman, in my opinion, did a lot of good moves again. Seemed to get best available players. He maneuvered around a little bit, went up and then went back and then went forward again. Picked a great tight end, stolen from Dallas. His name, obviously, Dallas, which I still can't believe that they're actually trying to put a GoFundMe page to raise money to have this guy change his name. Are there more better charities in Philadelphia now?
Yeah, the thing was, there's been other players, both on the Phillies manager, right, was Dallas
Green.
Dallas Green. They had an offensive lineman. His first name was Dallas a couple of years ago. Nobody thought about it, but in his introductory conference call, he had revealed back at South Dakota State, and he did again that night in front of the entire assembled Philadelphia media, saying that his father named him after the team. So he is named after
He better not drop any balls at
Dallas Cowboys, and he didn't. And he was perfect. He said that I never liked the Cowboys, even though my dad. And he says my stepfather, meaning there was a parting of the ways there somewhere along the line, made me a Packers fan. Mm-hmm. So that's I think where the whole silliness started with the GoFundMe page to change his first name. Yeah. And of course, David Akers, I mean, was that epic or what?
Wow.
You know, hey Dallas fans, he goes off about winning the championship last year and they're all booing him. And then he says, hey Dallas fans, last time you were in the Super Bowl, these draft picks weren't born. the whole thing just, this ultra anti-Dallas hysteria was kind of started by David Akers, and you pick a guy named Dallas who admits he was named after the team.
It should have been Jason Witten's replacement, too. He was all set to go to Dallas himself.
Yeah,
he thought he was going to go there. And then Jason Witten, ESPN pulled made the announcement too soon before he was ready to have it announced. I mean, the team knew he was thinking about it, but they kind of jumped the gun announcing it. And the Eagles, they were locked in on what was going on. They leapfrogged the Cowboys and take the tight end that they certainly would have taken. you know. So,
but you look at the Eagles draft, and again, it looked like a case of best available players, and also you fill some holes. You go into the draft, they're probably looking to replace Brent Celek, so they add a tight end. You look at other weaknesses. Slot corner was one we talked about before the draft, an area the Eagles probably should address. They add Avante Maddox, who's not big, but a lot of high praise about him and what he can do defensively. Alan Rock in particular, what did you think about Dallas, Avante Maddox? And then it looks like adding some depth the rest of the way in the draft.
Well, as far as Dallas is concerned, I mean, you know, Doug Peterson loves that 12 personnel, the two tight ends, and sometimes even three tight ends, and oftentimes it's been a offensive lineman has been that third tight end, so it'll be interesting to see how they work that out going forward. But basically, he's a Zach Ertz clone, so it just creates tremendous matchup problems for the defense, mm-hmm. and you know, there's not enough guys on the defense to match up with them physically, so you're going to have to try to out-scheme defensively the Eagles when they have those two guys on the field, and oh, by the way, all the other, you know, the receiver core that they have on top of that is, it's a matchup nightmare if you're a defensive coordinator. I'm sure, you know, all the defensive coordinators that have to play the Eagles this coming year are already sweating.
Yeah, they probably got better, too, upgrading over Torrey Smith, too. So I guess if you're still looking at weaknesses for the Eagles, one of them, I guess, the big story that came out today, Timmy Jernigan's going to be out 4 to 6 months. So you're looking at not having him for the first month or two. And then there's also some questions about their contract. He renegotiated his contract. Alan Rock, what are you hearing about Jernigan, a replacement for him? And is there any the issues with the contract? Is there any issues that they're going on? It seems a little suspicious timing.
I have no idea. I know that it went from being just, it seemed like he'll be fine, he's going to be back 100%, to out 4 to 6 months. So he's going to miss all training camp, all the preseason, you would think.
This was just, he was what, working out sometime? And he just, it seemed to be some confusion.
It happened to, well, he was working out with Bill Allen last year, if you remember. He tore his pec muscle. And so he was out for a while, but came back really strong. They're trying to renegotiate a lot of. We all may be connecting the dots a little bit here, but they have been renegotiating contracts and will be for the next few years, because when you see Alshon Jeffrey's contract this coming year, isn't that big of a deal, or Lane Johnson's, but the following year, 2019, these things are they're enormous amounts, and they're going to be probably renegotiated. So I think that because there's such a tight amount. With the salary cap, that they're going to be renegotiating players' contracts all the time to find room to sign players. They didn't have very many even unsigned free agents this year, although they got this kid Josh Allen, they gave a $60,000 bonus to, and he wasn't even drafted, a running back who they really think could be the next Corey Clement. But as far as it was funny, Dallas Goedert is he's going from playing against Duquesne and really fine football programs, but not Power Five, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. And then he's going to be, he really, from a pass-catching standpoint, I think he's going to do great, but he's going to be needed to block. Mm-hmm. And you're going to go from playing that kind of competition, and once in a while you play a D1 school, to playing against Ryan Kerrigan, to, DeMarcus Lawrence, mm-hmm. and Vernon Olivier with the Giants. This is a huge leap to who you're going to be expected to block. Yeah. So that's his biggest hurdle. And probably Isaac Seumalo was the happiest guy in the Eagles locker room that they didn't pick a guy that whose focus is blocking. So he still keeps his job, you know, so because they're going to be putting him in there. But you're telling the team when you put Isaac Seumalo in there as your sixth offensive lineman, that basically is your tight end.
Yeah, follow him.
You know, yeah, he's not going to be he's not going to be going any pass routes, that's for sure.
The one thing, I mean, they did, obviously, they also lost Bo Allen and Vinny Carey, but they did sign a couple guys. They traded for Bennett, and they signed Haloti Ngata to, that should soften the blow a little bit, but, you know, that was going to be to add, I think, to Tim Jernigan, and now that he's not going to be there, that presents a little bit of a hole, but I think we've seen that Howie has, I mean, he works harder than anybody, it seems like, at changing the roster almost daily if need be. So if there's somebody out there that they want, or you know, they'll go get them.
That's why they did grab those guys for this situation. You're going to lose players. You're going to lose players every year. So nobody thought that Bo Allen was kind of a blow to them last year, but they won the Super Bowl. So he did come back. He did play well when he came back. So this is why you stock up on D linemen. You can never get enough offensive linemen. You can never get enough D linemen.
And they really seem to value defensive linemen. They added another one in the draft with Josh Sweat, who is got all the measurables. He's just been injury prone a little bit. Apparently he can only practice once a week when he was at Florida State, so that's a bit of a concern. But if that's all behind him, he should have a great player. And I really think because they only had five draft picks and probably both of the offensive linemen and especially the guy from Australia are projects.
Yeah. That was an interesting pick, too. I heard a report he has never played football before.
No.
And you waste a draft pick on him or use a draft pick on him?
He was hanging around a football academy. I'm not going to say the name of the school, but they pretend to be a high school, but they're really not. Mm-hmm. And it's some kind of an academy for football players. And he hung around there for 4 months and then left and entered the NFL draft because he's not a kid. He's not really a high school kid, yeah. But he's
Interesting draft pick because you'd think he might have been available as an undrafted free agent.
It's probably the only position where you can really draft somebody to that or you can make into a project. He is enormous, amazingly athletic, a 5'40" at 350 pounds, and he's really, really tall. He's a tremendous athlete. It's a gamble. They must have thought at the seventh round that there wasn't anybody left mm-hmm. that would be anything but maybe a project on the practice squad. So why not?
Well, and that's what he is. But I think they've got a hit on some of these undrafted free agents they signed. Al mentioned Josh Adams, the running back, adding him to a deep running back core. But they also signed an edge rusher who a lot of people feel like is maybe like one of the top 10 undrafted free agent, Joe Osman. Another D lineman. So, like Al said, you can't have enough of them.
Al Thompson, Rock Hoffman, our special guests. Al, the editor-in-chief and sports director at Football Stories Magazine and WRDV. Rock Hoffman, on-air personality and the college football editor, joining us. We're going to continue the talk of NFC East draft recap and then some other issues coming up a little later on. But right now, it's Keith's favorite moment of the show. It's called Growler's Grumblings, where Keith sounds off and talks about everything and anything on his sports mind.
Well, I'm going to use my time to bring it back to local content and a number of things have been happening, and I'm not going to be on until June. I mean, so I got to get some of this stuff.
You're
in
welcome
here.
To be here.
But Michael, I want to salute Mike Grasso, the Bethlehem Catholic baseball coach, coaches 900th game. He is Bethlehem Catholic.
Wonderful
just a
guy.
Great ambassador for that school. Speaking of Becca, Jeff Karam, what a fantastic wrestling coaching career he had. We expect him back one day. Maybe now that the brothers will get along a little bit better. Jeff and Jody will get along a little bit better, but Jeff Karam did a fantastic job, and I know a lot of resentment by people showing up over there at Dewberry and Madison Avenue, but fantastic job. And speaking of Becca again, Ryan Young, first-team All-State, Justin Paz made second-team All-State in 4A. Super job by Jordan Holmquist, first-teamer in AA, and Isaiah Graves from Caddy getting his second-team honor. And 3A, want to salute them. Speaking of those academies we were just talking about, IMG Academy in Florida now has helped to produce two great Division I recruits now out of our area. Kalen West from Liberty goes to Coastal Carolina through IMG last year, and now Aja Blunt from Northampton joining her, going that IGM or IMG route to Coastal Carolina. Wish them both the best. And finally, congratulations to Nick Sharga from Northampton, who has an opportunity to make it with the Raiders, and John Gruden out there. Troy Pelletier, they didn't mention him, but Lehigh had a phenomenal career. I don't know if he could stick with the Eagles. They seem to be pretty well loaded at the receiver position, but Troy Pelletier hopefully will get a shot with them or with another team. I hope he has a great tryout with the Eagles. And Sebastian Joseph from Stroudsburg going to the Rams, and Kaiser White from Emmaus High School in Lackawanna going to Tampa
San Diego.
Bay. San Diego. Los Angeles.
Oh, well,
the Los Angeles Chargers. That's right.
Wherever they are, this
California.
Right.
But we didn't, everybody focusing naturally and deservedly so on Saquon Barkley, but our local products, whether they went to school here, I mean, college, or they're from the Lehigh Valley High School scene. We wish them all the well as they begin their new journey into the National Football League.
And coming up, we're just 3 weeks away from our first remote show, Sports Talk Gets Wild. We're going to be out on location broadcasting from Buffalo Wild Wings on Grape Street in Whitehall. 3 weeks from today, our first show featuring Lehigh Valley All-Star senior football players. We'll be talking about their thoughts on the past year, thoughts on their road ahead for college or other projects, and also their thoughts on playing in the All-Star game in June. That's a pretty much an annual tradition we've had just about every year of the Sports Talk program, and we'd love to have you come out there. You'll see a great show and some outstanding people support Lehigh Valley High School football, and the money raised, a portion of the total bill at Buffalo Wild Wings will be going to the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. So we'll be raising money for a great charity. Come on out, support local high school senior football players, talk some football, ask a question, and support the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of the Greater Lehigh Valley by coming out and checking out the show. For more information, go to our website, rcn.com/rcntv. As we head to our second break of the evening, time for our second timeout feature, and the Northampton volleyball team has been building towards this season with one of the most skilled coaches now at the helm. The K-Kids are looking to make a statement with some actions both on the court and off the court. We talked with Northampton following its win over Allen this past week.
Districts tonight. Tonight with this win, we are in district. So we're gearing up at the right time. They're coming together the way that I've asked them to at the right time. They're peaking. So.
Yeah, I'd say we're exactly where we want to be. We just went green today, so I mean, I'm happy with it so far.
Yep. As a team, when we come together like we did right there, and the games such as like Easton and Becca, we know that we're going to succeed.
And it's something to be said for them with a new coach this year. They've been fighting for this since their freshman year. And they've come on board with the new coaching staff and have listened and have done very well with responding. And that's all we look for all the time from them, is that they respond out of like pressure situations, not react, but respond.
Yeah, we want to go hard every play, even if it means hitting it into the net. If we hit it as hard as we possibly can, keep pushing, then we got it. We know that we're going to succeed.
Oh, I tell them that all the time. I'd rather have a full-on aggressive mistake than anything that's kind of just dwindling, like thinking about it. So they did exactly what I've been asking them to do and put it together well.
We're very aggressive. Most of the time it's good aggression, but it's good to sort of get our energy up. When we get our energy up, we feel on top of the world. We're very confident in ourselves, and so we think if we can bring the energy and communicate, that we can put together the best match that we can play. We're putting it together much better later into the season, which I think is very good. We all think that's very good, and we want to keep going and fight harder, fight stronger.
I'm just looking to come out playing strong, come out in district strong, see how good we can do, and try to be the best team we can.
We're coming for everybody.
In what shape or form?
You said, well, I was working with Saquon Barkley, now I'm working with you.
Welcome back to RZN Sports Talk, presented by The Morning Call. I'm trying to get in on Keith's PR deal with Saquon Barkley here. 1% I'll take here. Our special guest, Al Thompson from Football Stories and also from WRDV Radio. Brock Hoffman, the college football editor for Football Stories magazine. And I ran into Al covering the Sixers. I ran into Rock covering the Phillies. You guys are all over the place. Before we continue with the NFC talk and recapping the draft and getting on to the Washington Redskins, Al, why don't you talk about the latest edition of Football Stories and what you have lined up for this
well,
month's issue?
Right now I plan to do an issue on Jason Kelce. A lot of it was because I got the idea was because you're always trying to find something interesting, obviously, for the cover and whatever. And we have incredible photographers at Football Stories, and we're very blessed to be able to to shoot the games. Mm-hmm. And so Jason Kelce at his kind of get-together with the media in the media house, this little kind of second-story room we're all kind of crammed into, he really became emotional. About 2 weeks ago. This is 3 months after the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And these guys are getting not hammered, but they're getting they're feeling the emotions of the fans here. It's been 57 years. People were walking up to them, and he literally talked about people walking up at urns of their ashes of their father and asking them to, like, throw the ashes onto the bus for them. And Nick Foles, in the same press conference, was saying that grown men, macho men, he calls, is coming up, and they try to say thank you, and they don't get through the first sentence before they start crying.
Wow.
So you could see, and he started tearing up a little bit, but Jason just absolutely, you know, had to stop himself because he was losing it, and just the emotion of the whole thing, and how he came from last year, where he was going to be traded,
yeah,
and then he first team All Pro and a Super Bowl trophy, and breaks as much as he has as much to do with breaking the 57-year drought as anybody.
And a man, the man will never have to buy another drink in Philadelphia.
No.
If he lives to 150, right?
He's the greatest mummer who ever lived.
Yeah.
And and he said
that was hard to accomplish.
But one of the most epic speeches ever at a parade with that crazy getup on. Yeah. I mean, I don't mean getup; it's a mummer's thing. A lot of people didn't know what it was, but it was Avalon Mummers. And they're going to put statues of him up, you know, at some point. Last year, everyone wanted him traded. So it was it's just an idea. He has come full circle.
And you kind of understand why it's so hard to repeat, because the fans keep wanting to relive the Super Bowl. I mean, I'm sure you guys have run into people like, oh, it's 3 months since they won the Super Bowl, and I still get goosebumps. Like, and, you know, the players have to feel that. And if people are coming up, oh, man, thanks for winning the Super Bowl, they're not even, you know, the draft was an afterthought here in Philadelphia, this year. A, because they were drafted at the end, but because everybody was still hungover from the Super Bowl.
If they lose opening night, it'll all end.
Honeymoon's over. The honeymoon is over.
Yeah, and this is the preseason game they'll lose. And where can people get football stories?
Feels like preseason football weather.
We're in three states, southeastern Pennsylvania, South Jersey, and in Northern Delaware, mostly at the Wawa food stores, Super Wawas.
Now, I wanted to ask you about the Redskins, and I'm going to say this. I think this is the third year in a row I said this. It looks like they made some smart decisions in the draft. They needed to improve the defensive line. They got a guy who's very good against the run, maybe a little suspect with his pass rush defense, but overall very good. Second straight year, they pick a defensive lineman in the first round, and they pick seven defensive players in the first four rounds since 2016. They go out and get a guy the Eagles fans kind of wanted in Darius Juice, who was available, but the Eagles, of course, maneuvered and picked up the tight end. And then they added some depth along the line of scrimmage, a nice linebacker a little bit later in the draft. It looks like the Redskins made some nice decisions again. It looks like they're going to be improved, but, you know, we've been there before. Can the Redskins take these players, some of the undrafted free agents, and challenge the Eagles, certainly, and then the Giants and the Cowboys as well?
Well, with De'Ron Payne, like you said, he's a run stuffer, but to be a mid-first-round pick where he was, he's going to actually have to have an impact in the passing game as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be something he's going to need to do. Geist fell for nobody knows why, and a lot of people feel like they got a really good value at him, I think the 49th overall pick or something like that.
Yeah.
It was the 59th pick, I think. So whatever, but adding to their running core. But, yeah, I mean, those top two guys, Payne has to perform, you know, against the pass, and Geist has to put the fact that he fell, however far he fell, behind him, or use it as ammunition or something, so he can have a productive NFL career.
Yeah. On the opening night of the Thursday night of the draft, and even into the second night, the word on Geist was that during his interview with Howie Roseman, that it didn't go well.
Mm-hmm.
That there was actually people could hear Geist like being rude to him, and it got around, and even Brian Westbrook brought it up on one of the TV shows he was doing, that this incident really did happen. It's not a story. It really did happen. And don't tick off the general manager of the defending Super Bowl champs. Not the smartest thing to do.
Yeah, the story going on that I've heard is he actually had gotten into a screaming match with Deuce Staley. I mean, this is a guy coming in for an interview. I mean,
that's
how many people go into a job interview, which is essentially what that was,
yeah,
and start yelling at the guy that might hire you?
So,
a good career move.
not the smartest knife in the drawer, that's for sure, to do that.
I guess there were stories, too, with other teams, which is one of the reasons why
it gets around
so
right away.
Oh, yeah.
You're at, but all the teams are there.
Yeah.
So they're all going to meet that night at dinner, wherever they went, all the player personnel people, anything, they didn't share that information. So
Plus,
he drifted.
I think he changed agents as well, so I don't think that helped him. So he's got to you know, I guess we'll say maturity issues or whatever. And again, he's got to put that behind him and either use it for fuel or just, you know, let it go.
Well, and the thing was with that, it was a good recovery by the Redskins because they lost out on a guy I think they really wanted was the massive tackle, Vita Vey, who ended up with, from Washington, who ended up with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers ahead of them.
Yeah.
So they got Deron Payne. It was a really good run stuffer. Like I said, they were one of the worst against the rush last year in the whole NFL. You kind of licked your chops if you're a running team when you played the Redskins because they were so bad at it. So you bring a guy in like that, I think he helps a Josh Norman. He helps a Ryan Kerrigan kind of elevate their game a little bit because the quarterback, you know, having a guy like that that can fill those gaps that help or make gaps for the defenders can really help their overall defense.
And by the way, they're going to be playing the Eagles, who had the number three rushing attack in the NFL last year twice. We're going to be playing Ezekiel twice and Saquon Barkley twice.
So I think we're going to get a run stuffer here.
All right, we'll have our final segment in the roundtable straight ahead on tonight's edition of Sports Talk as we head to break. The Easton baseball team honored its 1978 team that made it through the state playoffs, and they honored them before a big game this year. And, of course, current Rovers team doing very well, registering an EPC win against Dira. Sports Talk videographer Mike Kingsley was there and has more.
Special day honoring the 1978 baseball team that was so successful here, wearing the old style uniforms to promote that. A very special day for our kids to see those guys come back. Very exciting day. So, you know, as far as the game goes, anytime we win a baseball game like that and continue on to go to 10-1, we're really proud of our kids.
So far, we're 10-1, so the big things are looking good, but maybe a few little things here and there, throwing more strikes. Not walks or anything, but overall we're looking really well this season and hopefully we go really deep.
Bats today, even though we scored 8 runs, our bats today at times need to be better. We need to stay back. We need to hit the ball the opposite way. There's a lot of things we can do better as a group. Every game we look to improve. I thought we ran the bases very, very well and we pitched it very well.
Today I just focused on throwing strikes down the middle of the plate or hitting my locations and not throwing balls and walking people.
You know, I think our pitchers really executed well. We've had real hot bats all year. So I think if we just keep doing the things that we do, I think we'll be all right, and I think our strategy just has to stay the same.
Everything we're doing right now is great. If we just keep doing the things we need to do and get the wins we need to get, we should be perfect. And because everyone on this team, we could play, we know how to play, and just coming out every game fired up will be really good. Just shout out to my team, best team I ever played with. Couldn't ask for a better group. That's about it.
Final few minutes of RCN Sports Talk presented by The Morning Call. We'll jump right into our roundtable segment, a variety of local, regional, national topics for gentlemen to debate on. Topic number one, this comes from Eitan Shander, who's been on our show before. Great guy, I think, on the ESPN Philadelphia radio station. Made a statement the other day that he firmly believes that the interest right now in the Sixers is higher than the interest in the Eagles and the NFL draft right now, which I thought was interesting. Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, of course, getting a lot of national attention right now. Do you think the Sixers are more popular than the Eagles?
I want to chime in real quick. I think it's preposterous. The Eagles are more popular right now than the other three franchises combined. Throw in the Big Five basketball scene. It's clearly Eagles country. It's always been Eagles country. Look it. Are the Sixers creating some excitement because they've been so bad for so long? Absolutely. Do the Sixers maybe have a 5-year to 7-year window where they might get more done than the Eagles ultimately? Yeah. Well, Embiid and Simmons, if they could stay healthy, look pretty darn good together. They didn't look good the other night in Boston. They didn't look particularly good. But, no, this has always been Eagles country. I mean, it used to annoy me that driving around in March or whatever and you're getting ready for baseball or whatever, we still have to hear Eagles talk, but it is Eagles country. It's, and more than ever, it is definitely Eagles country.
Yep. Alan Rock?
Well, I think that I agree with Keith that this is, you know, it's Eagles. That's it. They're base, everything about the Eagles were they are the soul of the city. And but right now they have everybody's attention, including the Eagles. I mean, if you go to the games, they have Doug Peterson ringing the bell. They bring one night they brought Kelsey Lane Johnson and Brandon Brooks in to ring the bell. They bring other players in to ring the bell. They're
that shows
at all
how
the
popular
games.
The Eagles are, though. That shows how popular the Eagles
but,
are.
You see them all over the Twitter. Carson Wentz, they're all saying, go tonight. They go. And a lot of the Sixers were at the Super Bowl. Joel Embiid was at the Super Bowl with mm-hmm. Justin Anderson.
Yeah.
And so they have everybody's attention right now. So, and they should. They're in the second round of the playoffs.
It's May. They should have the
They have
attention.
Everyone's attention. May. But are they going to that's absurd.
Rock?
Yeah, I mean, if they win the NBA Finals, I don't think the parade's going to be, for them, as big as the Eagles parade was. I don't think Joel Embiid is going to dress as Ben Franklin or anything like that. Dance down the parkway.
The one thing I would offer up, though, too, if you watch ESPN and the national news, Sixers get more attention than the Eagles have the last couple months. I mean, the Sixers, as soon as they start getting hot, they're the big story. They're mentioning them all the time. They're talking about how Ben Simmons is compared to some of the all-time greats that have ever played. The Sixers are, on a national scale, getting a lot more attention
ESPN
the last couple months.
Is, there's a relationship between the ESPN and the NBA. Without the ESPN, the NBA popularity wouldn't be nearly what it is. And I think the NBA is longing for the Sixers to come back strong. They love this Boston Sixers series. And if they can get the Knicks and the Lakers, to be good again, then they really have something cooking. Right now, it's Eagles country in Philadelphia. Always will be, as far
All
as
right.
I can see.
Topic number two, we only have 60 seconds left. But besides Saquon Barkley, who was the biggest name for those of the fans in our coverage area, New York, Washington, and Philadelphia? Rock, who's the biggest name?
I'm going to say the Eagles' first fourth-round pick, Avante Maddox. Like you said, plug in there. At that slot receiver position, it's an incredibly important position now in the NFL, so I'll say him.
Al?
I'm going to go with Will Hernandez, the guard out of UTEP for the Giants. He is key. They had you're only as strong as your weakest link, and he fills a big link there.
All right, and Keith?
And Payne, for the reasons discussed, it's a running division right now. Daron Payne, the Redskins need him to stuff up that line.
All right. My thanks to Al Thompson and Rock Hoffman for joining us. Lou Trevino was on with us, a pitcher for the Oakland Athletics from the Eastern Pennsylvania, getting called up to the big leagues. We're going to be off for the next couple of weeks. We have some encore shows lined up, and then Buffalo Wild Wings on the last Thursday in May. Hope you'll join us for that program out in Whitehall. For Keith, I'm Chris. Good night, everyone.